I love you. I love you. I love you. And where you go, I'll broadcast. I'll broadcast. I'll broadcast. Welcome in to World Soccer Talk Radio here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. My name is Nate Abaurea. Tweet me at NateWST. Keep the hate mail coming. I swear to God, everyone's been attending the player haters ball over the last week. The most diabolical haters this side of the Mississippi. They've been coming at me on Twitter, but you know what? I can take it. If you can't stand the heat, get out the kitchen. That's right. But if you know, if you want to just send me like a nice love note, you want to tell me how much you love the show, you want to tell me how much you enjoy all of the World Soccer Talk programming, from the Prem Review show to this one, to the special edition podcasts on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. If you want to do that, you want to send me a nice positive, loving note on Twitter, feel free to do that. More than welcome. Again, at NateWST and at World Soccer Talk to get a hold of all of us. A very special edition of the show. I'm very glad that you're tuning in for this one. A legend of my favorite football club in the whole world. A Liverpool FC legend. A man who also is a longtime Major League Soccer manager and someone who you know is a television voice for ESPN FC is going to be with us. I speak, of course, of the great Steve Nichol. And for those of you that might not be totally familiar with Steve Nichol's playing career, you heard Craig Burley actually touch on this back when Craig was on the show late this past summer. And Craig said, of all the guys at ESPN FC, Steve Nichol's the one who's a European Cup winner, a multi-time English First Division winner, an FA Cup champion. I mean, he is a storied footballer with medals and trophies to his name. He was part of one of the greatest Liverpool dynasties, shall we call it, in English football history, those Liverpool teams from the 1980s and even into the early 90s. You'd never know it by talking to Steve Nichol. He's just one of the most humble people you'll ever meet. But again, 14 seasons, 343 appearances for the Mighty Reds. So cannot wait to go down memory lane with Steve Nichol, talk about his time at Liverpool, talk about his pathway into coaching and his eventual pathway into broadcasting and punditry with that great crew over there at ESPN FC. A proud Scot, a proud Liverpool legend with us on the other side of the break. It's Steve Nichol alongside yours truly, Nate Abaurea, right here on World Soccer Talk Radio.
Electric Avenue, and then we'll take it higher.
Cheers.
You're listening to World Soccer Talk Radio with your host, Nate Abaurea, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Pretty good.
Pretty damn good, lads! Yeah!
Welcome back in to World Soccer Talk Radio here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Our guest in this edition of the show, all you Liverpool fans know this man quite well. 343 appearances in 14 seasons on Merseyside for the Mighty Reds. All you fans of the New England Revolution know him as a longtime manager of your club. And all you fans of ESPN FC, well, you see him quite often on your television screens. Steve Nichol, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No problem. My pleasure.
So a whole lot to talk about with you. But one thing that I want to start off talking about here is I hear rumors of an upcoming Steve Nichol autobiography and some involvement with our mutual friend Mark Donaldson. You care to tell us a little bit more about this project?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, people have been asking me for a long time, you know, when I'm going to write a book. Why wouldn't you write a book? You should do it. And it really wasn't something that I wanted to do, to be honest. It wasn't until, I don't know, maybe a couple of years after I'd actually been here at ESPN that it just kind of felt right and just felt like the right time to do it. And having Mark here day in and day out, I thought was perfect because, you know, you really need to spend time with somebody. When you're talking about an autobiography, mine is a little different than what you probably get these days. You know, you've got 25-year-olds and 26-year-olds and even 21-year-olds pulling out these autobiographies, and that's, to me, that's not right. So I wanted to do this properly. It's not going to be countless games that I scored in. It's more about thoughts behind what happened, or, you know, going into to Heysel, for instance, or going into to Rome, you know, what was going through my head, taking that penalty kick that I missed. So it's really all personal stuff that I never thought I would ever want anybody to know. But being with Mark every day and being able to sit down and just talk, and he just types away and lets me ramble on, and we're pretty much done and dusted with it. It's just a case now of putting it together, but I'm sure people enjoy it. As I said, it really is about my thoughts. It's not about anything other than that, and it's very, very honest and straight to the point. Not controversial, but honest.
Very much look forward to checking that out when it does come out. And Mark Donaldson, again, a great friend of the show, someone we've had on a couple times before, and definitely the quality Scottish connection on display yet again there as well. And I got to ask you, as far as the mental side of your game, because I've studied your career extensively and there's so many great points within, but I want to go back to your first season at Liverpool, and you go back to the early 1980s. You end up spending 14 years with the club, and there's all the honors, all the trophies, all the famous moments. But when you think back to the very beginning of it, and being a young lad at Anfield, and all the legends that were around you, guys that were already established, just legends of the game, what did that do for you as a player, both professionally as on-field talent, and also the mental side of the game, the guys that you were surrounded by at such a young age at Liverpool, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that you have to do is be accepted. That's the only way you survive in a place where there are so many good players and so many strong characters. You know, you talk about the mental side of the game, it really is 50% of it. So you have to be like that as well. But at the same time, coming from Man United, a small club, I'm not going to walk through the door and gain that experience and have that. But if you're smart and you keep your mouth shut and you keep your ears open and you kind of soak in and smell in what's going on around you, that seeps into you without you actually going out your way to do it. It becomes part of you. But the very, very right at the very beginning, it's about being accepted as a football player as much as anything else.
Well, Steve, when you talk about having the mouth shut and the ears open and earning everything in a situation like that, what are some of the stories that come to mind in that regard when you think back on it all these years later?
On the playing side, it really is a case of, you know, you pick a pass during a game or you do something during a game that you really don't think about. And it's not until afterwards when maybe you're watching it or you're sitting talking to one of the other players about, you know, the coaching staff were always asking about your thought process. You know, what were you thinking at that particular time? And for me, the thing that rang true with me was when I turned around once and said, well, to be honest, I really wasn't thinking. I just did it. I could see a little look in their eyes to say, you know what, we've started getting through to this guy. Because it's all about the process, and it's all about being smooth and getting things done. And if you have to overthink it or think too long about it, then it disappears. So just being sucked into that atmosphere and that environment and actually becoming part of it without really a certain minute in time that you decide that's what you're going to do. You just soak it in and it becomes part of you.
Without a doubt. And I look back on that roster, that squad of that first Liverpool team that you were a part of, and you see names like Ian Rush, you see names like Kenny Dalglish, David Fairclough, Graham Souness, Phil Thompson, the list goes on and on. These are guys that obviously are legends of the club and legends of the game in Great Britain, and the diversity there from Scots to Welsh to Englishmen. Who were some of the guys that you remember the most opening up to you at a young age when you were first at Liverpool?
Well, no surprise. I mean, the Scottish contingent, which there was a big Scottish contingent at the time, kind of took me under their wing. At the same time, I'd have to say that they were the very first ones that would wind me up and put me in some positions that maybe weren't the best. But it was all done. In good-natured fashion, you know. But definitely the Scots guys. But to be honest, really, really, truly, and simply, this group that I walked into was just together. I mean, nothing happened at the club without everybody doing it together. You know, nights out, being on tour. You know, it wasn't two and three guys going somewhere and two and three other guys going there. The mentality was, right, we're going out, but we're all going together and we're all staying together. I mean, that was just how it was. The group was so tight. And of course, when you're such a tight group, it doesn't matter whether you're a 19-year-old kid like me coming into the group or whether you're a Graham Souness or a Kenny Dalglish, everybody looks after everybody else, which, I mean, I'd never really seen that before.
Steve, did you ever imagine in your wildest dreams at this time that we're going back to that you'd end up spending 14 years at Liverpool Football Club?
No, not at all. It seems like a long time. It sounds like a long time, but it went very quickly. I actually remember Matt Lawrenson saying to me pretty early on when I got there that, look, he just said, look, enjoy yourself. He said, because you know what? It's going to be over before you think. And I was nodding my head thinking, yeah, right. But honestly, I'm sitting here now and I'm thinking, wow, did that happen? It really goes so quickly that you have to try and enjoy it every chance you get, because it just doesn't last forever.
Our guest in this edition of the show is Steve Nicol. And on the other side of this break, we're going to talk about Steve's pathway into coaching here in America, in fact, as well as his pathway into broadcasting and how that all came out and how the move to the East Coast of America even happened in the first place. Very much enjoying the show. Hope you are enjoying this episode as well. And you can get the podcast on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and of course, the website worldsoccertalk.com, in addition to listening to us live right here on Sports Byline. Nate Abarrea and Steve Nicol back with you after this right here on World Soccer Talk Radio.
You're listening to World Soccer Talk Radio with your host, Nate Abarrea, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
This man is absolute magic that belongs in a different galaxy altogether.
Welcome back into World Soccer Talk Radio. Nate Abarrea and Steve Nicol here with you. And Steve, we jump past the Liverpool playing days now, and I want to ask you about your first move to the East Coast of the United States and your move to Boston. There's some very interesting backstories to all this that I'm not sure a lot of people actually know about. Could you shine a little bit of light into what moved you across the Atlantic in the first place back in the late 90s?
Yeah, I had just finished playing with Sheffield Wednesday in the Premier League, and I was looking to start doing my coaching badges, and I was hoping to just keep playing as well. So I was playing with Doncaster non-league, which is just up the road from Sheffield, while I was doing my badges, and I got a call from my agent saying that he had spoken to John Kerr, who is now the Duke coach. And he said, or asked if I would be interested going over there and playing and help him coach the team. And quite frankly, I hadn't had any other offers when I'd finished playing. And I thought, my kids are 14 and 12. And if I was going to take a chance, I had to do it straight away, because if we were going to come over, we were going to come for a year and see how it went. And if it worked, then great, but if it didn't, then it wouldn't affect the kids' education at home. 16 years later, we're still here. So I went over there, played for the Boston Bulldogs in the old A-League, and was helping with the coaching, and John Kerr had an offer from Harvard University to go and coach them. So then I became the head coach. From there, a couple of seasons there, at the end of the first season, the Revolution actually made a coaching change. Got rid of Walter Zenger with a couple of games to go. And I basically took over for the last two games, spoke to Sunil Galati, and we kind of mutually agreed that I wasn't ready for MLS. I knew nothing about the players or the system or how it worked. And so I went back to the Bulldogs until, again, probably 18 months later, another coaching change where I was asked to go as an assistant coach to Fernando Covillo. He was relieved of his duties, as they say. And then I was given the interim job for the rest of that first season. And then 10 years later, I left.
Well, what do you remember about the earliest days for you with the Revolution, the earlier days of Major League Soccer as a league? What do you remember about those first few matches coaching with the Revolution?
Well, fortunately, I had been there for probably 5 months, 4 months leading up to Fernando Clavio leaving. So I kind of knew what was needed, which really was a bunch of players who really needed to find some confidence, because looking around the rest of the league in that 4 or 5 months, I realised that individually our players were as good as any other team. So it was a case of getting confidence up. It took a little while. You know, we didn't make a particularly great start. I won the first game in charge, but then, my goodness, I think it was another 7 or 8 games before we actually won again. But having got the confidence up and really forgetting about the other teams, I did absolutely nothing before games in relation to the opposition. Every single thing I did that season was about us and about concentrating on what we were good at. And if we did, to the best of our ability, what we were good at, then guess what? We didn't need to worry about anybody else. So that's kind of what the first season was all about.
Was it at all a challenge for you staying away from your playing days? Because, I mean, we talk about these names that you were alongside for so long at Liverpool, the likes of Graham Souness, the Kenny Dalglishes, the Ian Rushes of the world. I mean, these true world-class footballers. Was it ever something that was a challenge for you adapting to maybe a slightly lesser talent pool in terms of Major League Soccer as a coach, Steve?
No, absolutely not at all. No, part of the genius of Liverpool is whether you are a superstar or not. Basically, if you're asked to clean the toilets, you're expected to do it. I mean, everybody's the same. Nobody, you know, whether one guy's better on the field than another guy, as far as the group's concerned, we're all equals. Listen, is there a hierarchy among the players? Yes, there is. But at the end of the day, if you didn't show whoever you were that you were mocking in, then you would stand out. So you had to do what was necessary. And that's kind of how I saw it. If I went and judged everybody on that group of players I played with, well, I'd never gotten anywhere anyway, so I'd have been better off packing the coaching books up and walking out. So you have to, you figure out what you've got. You figure out the talents that your players have, and then you try and put it together, or you try and put them on the field, both individually and as a group, in a position where it's going to benefit everybody.
Now, Steve, when you said that quote moments ago, it doesn't matter who you are, the best player, the lowest player on the team, if you're asked to clean the toilets, you do it. It's a quote that reminds me oh so much of the late, great Bill Shankly. And obviously, you never played for Bill Shankly, but considering his legacy as a Liverpool manager, his legacy as a Scot himself, how much of an inspiration as a manager for you was Bill Shankly?
I mean, everything that I walked into was a product of what he started. I mean, you couldn't fail to to figure out where everything came, where the thought process came from. You know, the training and the preparation. I mean, everything about it was exactly how it had been under Shanks. I mean, Liverpool are famous for promoting within. And, of course, when you do that, then that's why something like that continues through Bob Paisley, through Fagan. Kind of changed a couple of little things, but pretty much the same thought process. So all those instincts that I have now and the way that I treated players and the way I treat people I work with, it all stems from the same thing. It stems from all the philosophies that Shankly laid down, and which people like Ronnie Moran, Roy Evans, as coaches, bashed into you every single day.
Steve, do you have a favorite Bill Shankly quote by chance?
There's a few of them, isn't there? There's actually a story about Bill when, obviously, early 60s. Food for professionals wasn't quite what it was today. And, you know, Bill had a mate who was a butcher, and a couple of the younger guys, he did a deal to try and beef them up a little bit, and they would go to the butcher and get some meat a lot cheaper than most people and get them going. And one of those kids had come in to see Bill one day, and and chapped the door, and Bob let him in. And Bob, I'm getting Bill and Bob mixed up here for fun, by the way. Bob's his brother. I'm thinking of Bob Paisley as well. Anyway, so the young kid goes into Bill's office and says, "Boss, I've got a problem." And Bill says, "What's up?" He said, "My girlfriend's expecting a baby." And Bill just looked at him and said, "Geez, son, we've created a monster." It was fantastic. But there's millions of those.
I got to ask you, Steve, something funny here with comparing generations. We've got about 2 minutes left before we got to head to break here. But what do you think the late, great Bill Shankly would think of the current Liverpool manager, that quirky German named Jurgen Klopp? How do you think Shankly and Klopp would get along?
No, I think Shanks would approve. You know, Liverpool through Shankly to Paisley and Fagan and Kenny. Up until then, they really had guys who were sort of men of the people, people that identified with the ordinary paying man, you know. And I think that's what Klopp does. I think Klopp can see what it's all about with supporters. I think he definitely feels like one of them. It just feels right. To me, he looks like another one of those guys that I mentioned, a guy who's interested in the supporters and interested in the history of the club and everything else. So I think Shanks would be pretty happy that Klopp's in charge.
What a dream that is. I feel like that is just one of the most beautiful visuals I've ever conceived. It's just Shanks and Kloppo in a pub on Merseyside together, just telling stories, sharing footballing philosophies. That is golden. Someone out there in cinematic power land, please make this happen in some form or another. Jurgen Klopp and Bill Shankly sharing some pints together at a pub on Merseyside. Steve Nicol is here with yours truly, Nate Abarrea, on World Soccer Talk Radio. It's the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network, talking a little bit more about the Kloptimism on display right now with Liverpool, talking about their pathway into the League Cup final against Manchester City and hopes for a top four finish in the Barclays Premier League. Is it too far-fetched? Is it beyond the wildest dreams, or is it perhaps a reality considering the parity on display in the Premier League this season? And we'll talk a little bit about the FA Cup this weekend with Liverpool and West Ham. A whole lot more to get into regarding the mighty Reds of Merseyside. Steve Nicol and yours truly, Nate Abarrea, back with you after this right here on World Soccer Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
You're listening to World Soccer Talk Radio with your host, Nate Abarea, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
How'd you like to play football against the Germans?
Why not?
Soccer Talk Radio, back here with you on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Having a little bit of a laugh there off the air. Steve Nichol still with us here on the show. My name is Nate Abarea. Tweet me at NateWST and tweet all of us at World Soccer Talk. Continuing this conversation on Jurgen Klopp. Steve, before we get into the FA Cup fixture with West Ham and even next month's Capital One Cup final at Wembley against Manchester City and the Premier League chances for Liverpool here this season, I want to talk a little bit more about your first impressions of Jurgen Klopp. Obviously, you've known about him since, you know, long before October when he was hired by Liverpool. You go back to the days at Dortmund, and you may have even known about him in the days at Mainz and everything that he did in Germany as kind of this groundbreaking young manager. But when you first saw him take charge at Liverpool and you saw the sideline antics and you saw the intensity and the passion and a little bit of that off-kilter German craziness and the broken glasses and everything that goes with it, what went through your mind seeing that coming to a club that means the world to you, seeing that come to Liverpool?
To be honest, my first thought was that this guy fits. He looked as though he fit into that dugout or standing in front of it. He just, to me, fit. I can't say I'm 100% behind, you know, all the running around and all the antics. But listen, if there's a choice between showing passion and not showing any, I'll take that any day of the week.
Well, that transitions into something else I wanted to ask you about, and that is that going back to your playing days, do you think you could take a guy like Jurgen Klopp seriously as a player when you talk about all the running around, all the quirkiness? Is it something that would maybe put you a little bit off, or could you deal with it and go, hey, that guy's got my back, he's passionate, let's go to battle?
Yeah, I think you brought up the most important thing there. I think Klopp does have the backs. And as a player, no matter what happens, if a head guy has got your back, then that'll do. Listen, everybody can step out of line or not be playing well and deserve an earful. But at the end of the day, if you know that the guy in charge has got your back, then you'll run through a brick wall for him. Other than that, I'd have to say I like the way he gets people motivated. Listen, the best players motivate themselves, but it doesn't do any harm when you've got another guy standing beside you just ratcheting it up another little gear and basically showing that he wants you, and that's huge. I don't care how much money you're earning or how many medals you have. If you're stepping on the field and you've got a guy standing on the touchline, then you know all he wants is for you to do well and the team to do well. Then again, it's huge for any football player.
Well, it would seem as if the antithesis of what we're talking about here, this prototype that we're bringing to the stage here that very much represents Jurgen Klopp, it seems like the antithesis of all this would be the manager currently, for I don't know how much longer, but the current manager of a club known as Manchester United. And I have to ask you about Louis van Gaal now. I have to ask you about LVG in this regard. Do you think you, again, going back to your playing days and some of the guys that you were teammates with, even maybe you can speak for some of them, do you think you and some of your teammates of the past would have been able to play for Louis van Gaal? Would you guys have been able to pump yourselves up enough, considering some of the things that you just brought up there in terms of the strengths of Jurgen Klopp that may be some of the flaws of LVG?
I mean, at the end of the day, we're guessing. He doesn't particularly inspire me watching him. And the way that United play hasn't been particularly inspiring for anybody, least of all Man United supporters and their players. So I'm not quite sure I would. I think clearly, in my eyes, he's overcoached him. You know, again, you know, you go back to playing for Liverpool when I did. You know, the one thing that, well, one of the many things that was drummed into us is that, you know, we had certain responsibilities when we didn't have the ball. But when we had it, we were let free to go and play. And I don't really think, as a footballer, you want anything else. We all understand that you have to defend. Listen, we all want to attack all the time and go forward, but you have to defend. So you get your duties defensively. But after that, it has to be about the talent and letting each and every player, whatever talent he may have. I said it before, you know, you're putting players in spots where they're going to do well. And if you do that with everybody, then the team does well. So I think he's been a little tight on them as far as the coaching's concerned. And I think that's why when they eventually get to the final third, 3 days after they started, they can't produce anything.
Talk a little bit more about that term overcoached. Is that something that you ever found yourself guilty of, or any other managers that you played for in your career?
Not at the highest level, no. After I'd finished at Sheffield Wednesday, before I went to Doncaster, I actually went and there was a little town near Sheffield called Lincoln, which was really handy for me if I wanted to keep playing. And I went there and played in a reserve game for them, just to see how things went with myself and them. And my goodness, what an eye-opener that was. Every single time I got the ball, I was told to kick it into a corner. And I can assure you, by the end of the game, my right thigh was absolutely killing me, because all I did was boot it into a corner. I mean, I couldn't believe that was how they played, but that was how they wanted to do it. So I pretty swiftly left there.
Now, we're talking about all these coaches, all these managers. I mean, on so many different ends here, to, you know, the two ends of the spectrum. We're talking Klopp, we're talking LVG, and talking lower league managers in England, talking Major League Soccer and the old A-League here in America, and terms like overcoaching and man-managing and all these great things. And it just makes me have to ask you, Steve, are you ever going to consider returning to soccer managing, to being a top flight manager somewhere in the world of football?
I guess until I'm asked, I don't know. Pretty simple.
Well, I mean,
as far as it goes. If I'm asked, then I'll have something to think about. But up until now, I haven't been asked. So,
well, would you like to be asked?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I really enjoy this job, but, you know, the only thing you can never replace, whether you're a player or a coach, is on a Saturday night after the final whistle's gone and you've got 3 points in the bag or whatever it may be in the bag. There's no substitute for that. At the same time, I don't mind sitting watching football 7 days a week and getting paid for it.
Well, I want to let's talk a little bit more about that gig that you are quite good in right now, and you've got a great crew with you, and a very tight-knit crew, also a crew that has been very generous to us. I want to definitely tip my cap to everybody over there at ESPN FC. We had Shaq on Monday. We've had Craig Burley, Dan Thomas, Paul Mariner. The whole lot have been on this show at one time or another. And I have to ask you about the tight-knit quality of that, because you guys have this great cast of ex-footballers, and some shows, you know, you guys are with each other one day a week or one day every 2 weeks. You guys are around each other quite a lot, and maybe too much at some times. But in regards to the tight-knit quality, it almost seems like it's a football team. It almost seems like I'm looking at a club over there, that ESPN FC is this club of these players that are developing this chemistry, this cohesion together. Talk about that a little bit and what that means for you to have that level of familiarity with the rest of the crew over there.
Well, I would definitely agree that we do. Well, we are pretty tight knit. I think that comes across in the program. But I think it also helps the program. You know, we've spent our lives pretty much in a sort of dressing room environment. And when you do that, you can't be selfish. You know, if the only person in the room that counts is you 24 hours a day, then it's not going to work. Fortunately, we kind of take that dressing room mentality into the show. You know, it's about giving your opinion. And not everybody's going to agree all the time. And if I disagree with you or somebody disagrees with me, then that's all it is. It's not a personal thing. We just happen to think differently about different things. And so the fact that when we have a go at each other on the show, it doesn't spill over the same way it doesn't spill over when you're in a dressing room and you're winding people up and somebody's getting the mickey taken out of them more than somebody else. So that whole dressing room mentality, I think it definitely helps us on the show.
What is your favorite angry Craig Burley story in your time at ESPN FC? He's been getting quite passionate about everything with Manchester United and Louis van Gaal of late, but there's so many more good ones. What is your favorite memory of an angry Craig Burley moment?
Jesus. I mean, what day of the week are we talking? Actually, I'll be honest with you. The best angry one that comes to my mind about all of us was Alejandro Moreno when Steve Bruce said that it's the culture of the Latin Americans to dive. He absolutely went bananas and was screaming at the camera. He couldn't get close enough to the camera to tell Steve Bruce what he thought of him and where he could stick his opinion about diving in Latin America and South America. The bully one's impossible to answer because, as I said, just pick a day of the week and you'll get something.
Have you ever thought that Craig was going to strangle Dan Thomas? Because I've always wondered it, and I've asked them both that on the show, and they both say no, absolutely, it's all absolutely not. It's all in good fun. And then I see what day of the week it is, and I wonder sometimes if Craig is going to hop across the couch and just take control of Dan Thomas's neck.
No, I think maybe that's why he sits away across from him. So by the time he tries to get across there, he'll have lost that rage. But no, not at all. As I said, it's a pure dressing room mentality that we have. You know, same things go on in the dressing room. And very, very rarely does it get out of hand. And so far, it hasn't got out of hand at all with us, and I'm sure it never will.
All right, Steve, favorite guy on the ESPN FC crew to grab a pint with, most enjoyable pint partner, once the working day is over, of course.
To grab a pint with. To be honest, you'd be surprised at Burley. He's not such an angry man with a pint of beer in his hand.
So that's all it takes to calm down Craig Burley, apparently.
Yeah, and he's cold pint. That's all it takes.
Oh, I love it. Absolutely love it. All right, so the last thing that I got to ask you about is the near and distant future for Liverpool and for your work with ESPN FC. Next month, Liverpool are back in a cup final trying to win a trophy for the first time since 2012, which was also a League Cup final at Wembley. They actually beat Cardiff that time around back in 2012. But, Steve, we close with this one. Do you think Liverpool can beat Manchester City again? I mean, the way they did in the league definitely gives you some hope as a Liverpool fan, but do you think Liverpool can defeat Manchester City in the League Cup final in about 1 month's time?
Yes, absolutely. You know, Klopp has shown that he can motivate the players. And in a cup final, players are motivated anyway, but he can make that difference. Just that extra little push that I was talking about earlier, I think he can make that difference. Liverpool going into underdogs, no question, because they're not as good a side as Man City. Individually, they're not close to it. As far as that's concerned, he has to make a lot of changes. But in a one-game situation in a cup final, he definitely can be the difference maker and get his players in a position where they feel invincible and feel as though they can't lose the game and indeed go on and win it.
Absolutely. Steve, how can folks get a hold of you on Twitter, sir?
My Twitter handle would be Steve Nichol. Hold on a second. Let me see. I can't even remember it. Oh, my God. I can't even remember it.
Well, I know there's a number in there. I never Twitter myself,
so why? I don't know.
You've been fairly involved. I mean, I've interacted with you a little bit on Twitter.
Yeah, it's Steve Nichol 61. I'm only kidding.
Oh, the charming wit never goes away from this man. I swear to God. Steve Nichol, you are such a great guest on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. I've been wanting to get you on for some time, and you're welcome back anytime, and say hello to the rest of that fantastic crew over there at ESPN FC for us.
All right, no problem. Anytime.
Again, that was Steve Nichol. You can follow him on Twitter. Be sure to give that handle out one more time. We're back after this on World Soccer Talk Radio Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Another huge thank you to Steve Nichol for joining us in this edition of World Soccer Talk Radio. We never actually got to the next match at hand for Liverpool Football Club, that fourth round FA Cup tie tomorrow against West Ham. How's this for a little Fearless Friday forecast prediction? Robin Burt, I hope you're listening. Will Liverpool beat West Ham? You bet your iron hammer ass they will. Liverpool 3, West Ham 1. The hammer's out of the cup. Liverpool move on to the fifth round. I move on to my weekend. Come on, you Shasta Wolfpack. Come on, you mighty Reds. Signing off. Bye for now.